Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is February 21st, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, Reality Sinking In? I don't think so, but you know, it's a question we should ponder because maybe, just maybe, reality is sinking in. And the main focus of today's discussion is going to be centered around market performance today, some of those PMI numbers that came out across the board, what's going on in the bond market, what's taking place in the precious metal space. All of these questions need to be asked and answered. We talked yesterday about a potential dollar doom loop that we are very likely in the midst of, and we talked about the serious negative ramifications that that's likely to create globally. This is just sort of the natural ebb and flow of things, folks. This is not something that I don't think anyway is some sort of sinister plot. This is just what's going to take place. I mean, you're looking at the best girl at the dance, the best looking house in a bad neighborhood, that type of situation. Everything is relative. Where are you going to invest your money? Where are you going to find safe haven assets? What are you going to do? And that's sort of the juxtaposition, I guess you say, or the gist, rather, of really the dollar doom loop discussion that we had here yesterday. We've had it before. We're going to have it again probably a little bit today because everything is interconnected. I really think that this is going to be playing out for the foreseeable future, and it is going to have some big consequences and ramifications that are going to ripple the world over. So some of the market performance, we have U.S. stocks amazingly down. Once again, we have the Dow Jones Industrial Average giving back 224 points, down nearly 0.8%. The S&P 500 gave back 36, losing over 1%. The NASDAQ 100 gave back 182 points, down 1.9% for the day. The Japanese markets gave back 0.5%. Over in the UK, they gave back 1/3. Germans gave back 0.8. The French, the Italians, and the Spaniards all gave back about 1% on the trading session. Now, here in the United States, U.S. service sector activity falls for the first time in 4 years. U.S. services PMI dropped to 49.4 in February from 53.4 in the previous month and well below market expectations of 53. Remember, 50 is break even, above is expansion, below is contraction. February 49.4, and this is in the service sector. The reading pointed to the first contraction in the services sector since February of 2016 as new business declined at a record pace. Also, new export orders dropped amid concerns about the impact of the coronavirus outbreak. On a more positive note, business confidence was the strongest since last June. Now, we'll see how long that persists because I think the markets, at least over the past couple of days, are kind of getting the idea that maybe, just maybe, the crackheads on Wall Street and the idiots manning the printing presses in the world's central banks are not scientists, they're not virologists, they're not microbiologists, they're not epidemiologists. So their interpretation, their analysis of this coronavirus might just be wrong. And maybe, just maybe, the concerns of the microbiologists and the virologists and the epidemiologists, maybe they're going to be proven correct, or at least more so than what Wall Street and other investors think. And I think that happens to be the case. If I have to side when it comes to the analysis of something that has to deal with something scientific and medical, I am going to side with the scientists and the medical profession as, above and beyond the crackheads on Wall Street and the idiots manning the printing presses. It's a no-brainer. It is a no-brainer. But we live in the world of Oz, so that's why these markets have continued to melt up to the degree in which they have. When you have Apple coming out, negative forward guidance, take off. Puma comes out, negative forward guidance, take off 8%. Same thing with Adidas, and the list goes on and on and on. That's in the services front. U.S. factory activity growth, lowest in 6 months. U.S. manufacturing PMI fell to 50.8 in February, down from 51.5 in January. which was basically what was the market expectation as well at 51.5, but we got a reading at 50.8. So still expanding, but at a slower pace. And this is still for the month of February. We still haven't seen the full kick-in of the coronavirus, which is really through going to be the entirety of February. We know that it's going to continue into March. That's just in China. Now we know that there are increased cases really around the world, but particularly in South Korea, which is worrisome, and in Japan. We also have patients who have tested positive for coronavirus who have now been flown back into the United States. So we're going to see how well this plays out. And of course, you have cases that are taking place in the Middle East and in Africa. So, and we were told today by the World Health Organization that the window to contain this COVID-19 from really turning into a global pandemic, the window to contain this is narrowing. And that makes a whole bunch of sense to me. Maybe, just maybe, the markets are starting to say, well, you know what, we might have gotten this wrong with this continuation of a melt-up. But you know what's really going to tell the story, I think, anyways, is some little more follow-through next week. If these markets come rushing back, because who knows what the headline's going to be over the weekend, somebody might claim that this thing is cured, the markets don't care, the algorithms don't care. If that's the headline, that's what they're going to run with. Okay, so that's why the title of today's episode is Reality Sinking In, because it's relevant to the discussion that we've been having here for months. I mean, we could almost make every day that title, Is Reality Sinking In? And it's either going to be yes or no. So time will tell, but sooner or later, it will sink in. Over in Germany, we have German manufacturing PMI beating above forecasts. So we have German manufacturing increased to 47.8 in February from 45.3 in January and beating market expectations of a reading of 44.8. So Germany, 47.8, still in contraction, most definitely still in contraction, well below 50, but it did beat expectations. Now we'll see how long-lived this is going to be. This might have been just a short-term boost because of how slow they have been for the past year. But now once you have this coronavirus taking pace, it's not going to be good for Germany. It's not going to be good for everybody. We've been talking about this here for weeks. It's not going to be good. Here on the domestic front, how timely once again we are here at the Capital News, the U.S. 30-year bond. The yield drops to an all-time low. A record low of 1.892%. 1.892% on the 30-year bond. Makes no sense whatsoever unless you pay attention to this podcast and you understand what's really taking place in the global economy. Let's just call it 1.9%. For the sake of argument. Below inflation, which we talked about the other day, the entire yield curve, the Treasury curve, is yielding less than inflation. You are guaranteed to lose money. You understand what this means, folks. I mean, if you were to hold a 30-year bond to maturity, one, you're guaranteed to lose money, but all you're going to get is 1.9%. There's a lot of risk involved in sending your money away for 30 years, and that's all you're going to be compensated. This is further divergence between what global equities, and in particular U.S. equities, are telling us versus what the bond market is telling us. And the bond market is much bigger, much more sophisticated, much more liquidity. It's the big fish. Now, maybe the bond market's wrong, maybe the stock market has it right. That's typically not the case. Usually, cooler heads prevail and reality sinks in within the bond market before it does the equity market. But that's why we have these huge divergences, because the stock market's saying, oh yeah, growth, future growth is going to be booming, baby. No problems on the horizon. Forget everything that's taking place. Forget coronavirus. Forget the trillion-dollar deficits. Forget the trade war. Forget the locust swarms. Forget everything. Forget the supply chain disruptions, the demand shocks. Forget the amounts of debt that exist at the household level, the corporate level, the government level, central banks. Forget it. Prime time. Up, up, and away. And then you have the bond market that says, Hold your horses there, Willie. I don't think it's going to happen. Not even close. Not even close. And don't kid yourself, folks. There's bubbles in both. There's bubbles in both markets. So they can both implode, explode, whatever you want to say. And they likely will. Just a matter of which one goes first. Time will tell. That's why I tell you to stay diversified and stay vigilant, because nobody knows what domino is going to go first and which one it's going to set off next, and the one after that and the one after that. But it's not going to be good. And we discussed a little bit of that yesterday in the dollar doom loop, because that's going to be one of those dominoes. The question is, what's going to be the catalyst? Is it the COVID-19? Who knows? Time will tell. What about the Summer Olympics? As of today, they're still on. They're still going to take place. They're scheduled to take place in Japan. I don't know. You're going to have the entire world flocking to Japan in the midst of an outbreak? Are people going to trust it? I don't think so. Probably not. So we'll see what happens there as well. What about the commodity front? Well, we have WTI trading at $53.54 a barrel. Brent is at $58.40 a barrel. Natural gas is still holding the line at $1.90 per million British thermal units, BTUs. Gold, I don't know why this price fluctuated to the degree that it did. What I'm looking at is not correct. It's about 16, 2016, 40 in that range. Another nice day for gold. And silver is also up at $18.45 per ounce. So a flight to safety. And I just think it's a flight to safety. And I also think it's just people diversifying their portfolios. I think that's what it's going to be, because they have to. If you're going to be a rational, sane person in this environment, you have to be diversified. You just have to be. And if this is the crack-up boom, what takes place on the other side is going to be a gigantic bust of epic proportions that could turn this thing into the greatest depression ever. And again, I don't say this to be hyperbolic, but if that's the case, diversification isn't going to do you much good, because there's going to be anarchy, there's going to be chaos everywhere. That's what it's going to turn into. We see this, we're already getting a glimpse of it with the global protests. Okay? This stuff continues. It is not going to blow over well at all. The financial stress right now that exists within the entire system, and really right now focused in on China and in Hong Kong. These countries are so levered to the hilt, it's not even funny. $40 trillion in China, and I don't know the numbers off the top of my head when it comes to Hong Kong, but Hong Kong has their currency pegged to the U.S. dollar. Okay? That peg has maintained itself, if you will, for I think about 30, 40 years or so. Okay? And the reason a country might peg its currency to another country's currency is to give that nation some credibility. Okay, so say, for example, we have Hong Kong, right? Smaller economy, maybe at the beginning when they were getting started, you know, there was a lot of skepticism about how the government's going to perform, yada, yada, yada. So a lot of risk is the point of the story, right? So as a means of policy, as a means of instilling some sort of confidence in their economy, they say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to peg our Hong Kong dollar to the U.S. dollar. And now why would they do that? Because the U.S. dollar is a global reserve currency. For all intents and purposes, it's a stable government in the United States. It's the largest economy in the world, etc., etc. So that peg has been in existence for about 30, 40 years. If the financial stress gets too out of whack in China and or in Hong Kong, and that peg is broken, watch out. Watch out. That situation right there could be a huge catalyst that brings the global economy to its knees. That's how severe this could be. And you're talking about a country in Hong Kong that has been protesting for months. Months and months and months, and no end in sight. I mean, there might be a little bit of a pause because of the COVID outbreak, COVID-19 outbreak. But these people are still in the streets. These people are still upset now because the epicenter of this outbreak appears to be from China. And you have the Chinese Communist Party giving misinformation, disinformation, kicking out some Western journalists. all that's doing is lighting the fuse once again for the Hong Kong protesters, saying this is why we have to secede from China. This is why we cannot be involved with that government. They lie to us. They can't contain these types of outbreaks, etc., etc. I've been saying it here for months, folks. These protests are not transitory. They are history in the making. So that's some of the market performance. Discussed a little bit about the coronavirus with its continuing, picking up steam, unfortunately, in South Korea, in Japan, and in some other Asian countries. Talked yesterday about how Norwegian cruise lines, under a few of their name brands, are not going to be having any cruises in all of Asia until at least September of this year. We have a continuation or a further delay of manufacturing companies opening up and just business as usual in China, things getting kicked out further. March 10th seems to be a date on the books. March 10th. It's another two and a half weeks, folks. And we've just been reading off some of the PMI numbers from around the world. Some of them were better than expected. Some of them were worse off than anticipated. We have the Cass Freight Index that came out. And I've been saying here consistently for the past few months, I said I am going to be looking at the Cass Freight Index as a very strong leading indicator in how it performs over the first quarter of this year to make a determination as to whether or not this country is going to find itself in recession. And right now we have a continuation of a downward trend on a year-over-year basis. Once again, I think the 13th or 14th month now, because last year we kept saying, okay, well, and we were in agreement with what the analysis that was coming from Cass Freight itself in their report in regards to having a very high bar, very high threshold to beat on a year-over-year basis from last year, because there was such growth that took place in 2018 because you had all of that stimulus, all of that juice making its way through the market via the tax cuts, the deregulations, and then some companies wanting to get ahead of a potential trade war igniting. So there was an inventory build. So you had a whole bunch of trade and a whole bunch of traveling going on, and that's what the Cass Freight Index monitors, right? So it was easy to have a negative year-over-year reading because you had such a high bar the year prior. But now, it's continuing. It's continuing. We've had deterioration last year, and it looks like that deterioration is continuing thus far in 2020. And in fact, some of the numbers were so bad for the month of January that we haven't seen these readings, we haven't seen these lows since the Great Recession. So here we are once again, folks, with another number. And in my opinion, the Cass Freight Index is a significant leading indicator and something that should be monitored. Back to where we were in the financial crisis. And yet we are still told by the administration and his lackeys that this is the greatest economy ever, that it's boomtown here in the United States of America. It's not even close. It's not even close. I just want some truth-telling. I just want some real leadership. Is that too much to ask? It obviously is. Obviously is. So that's the Cass Freight Index. In January was before the COVID-19 outbreak. So, I mean, what do you think is going to take place when February's numbers come out in the middle of March? And how bad do you think March's numbers are going to be when they come out in April? And then you're going to have, obviously, at the end of March, you're going to have the first quarter locked in the books. So what are we going to see with global GDP when those numbers come out middle, end of April? Is the market just going to shrug it off? The stock's just going to continue to go up? Are they going to anticipate some sort of V-shaped recovery that everybody in quarantine is just waiting on pins and needles to go out and buy another iPhone or to buy a vehicle? They're just waiting to jump out there and do it? I have my doubts and reservations. That doesn't mean I'm wrong or doesn't mean I'm right. Who knows what the market's going to do? Who knows to what degree because we know what central banks are going to do. We know they're going to print money. We know they're going to lower interest rates because that's already what they're doing. So the question is, to what degree? Will Jay Powell take the cue from Donald Trump? Okay, he's been squawking and squeaking for, you know, months on end here. I want negative interest rates. Is the Federal Reserve going to cave into that? I certainly hope not. Because the financial system in Japan is in ruin. The financial system in Europe is in dire straits, and it's headed to ruin. I guess we should bring that here as well. That's what the president wants. He's not going to tell you that. He's going to say he wants the money. He's not going to educate people on what that means. I don't even know if he fully understands it, or if he's just looking out for his personal real estate interest because he's the king of debt, and he owes people and banks and financial institutions a lot of money. And he says, well, it's going to help me out in the long run. I'll be out of here. I don't care about the people. I hope that's not his logic or reasoning, but he is completely misguided to even utter such words, that he is a proponent in calling for negative interest rates here. And this audience, especially if you've been with me for a while, knows how detrimental negative interest rates will be to this system. That is a disqualifying remark in and of itself to be the president of the United States. And we're going to talk about some disqualifying characteristics, perhaps, or actions, because I do want to talk about the 2020 presidential race as well a little bit. So that's some of the market performance. You know, we've been talking about the economic disconnects. The Cass Freight Index is right in our face. You know, I just happen to believe that we are going to find ourselves in recession this year. That's most likely going to be my finding, because it's just one item after the next. And we don't know what's going to take place with COVID-19. That just exacerbates the problem. The debts are coming due across the board. Across the board. We talked the other day about an article in the Wall Street Journal where car dealers are telling potential buyers, stop paying your car payment. Just let whoever holds the loan, let them repossess your vehicle. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about what happens to your credit. We don't care. Good credit, bad credit, no credit, sign on the dotted line. We'll get you into a new car. Does that sound like boomtown to you? Does that sound like the best economy ever? Does that sound like free market capitalism to you? Is this what you supported? Is this what you want more of? Do you want more trillion-dollar deficits? Do you want more trade wars? Because we don't know what's going to happen with the European Union yet. They're supposedly ripping us off more than China did. So presumably, logically, we would have to go after the EU. You think the EU is just going to cave to Donald Trump? I highly doubt it. So we haven't even gotten to that yet. Farm bailouts, and the president once again is tweeting and talking about, well, if we got to continue to give the farmers money, we'll continue to bail them out. Because he continues to erroneously and falsely tell everybody that China was the one that's paying the tariffs, that China is writing us a check to the U.S. Treasury, and we're just simply taking that money and giving it to the farmers. Meanwhile, we have basically almost a record number of farm bankruptcies over the past couple of years, just for a magnificent trade deal that takes us back to where we were 2 years ago. If we're lucky. If we're lucky. I didn't believe it to begin with. Now add on top of it the COVID-19 outbreak, and it ain't going to happen. Not even close. These numbers aren't going to come close. And I know I read that headline to you guys yesterday about some U.S. official thinking, oh, yeah, China's going to make it up. They're going to do this, that, and the other. No, that's not how it works. That's not how it works. So don't hold your breath on China making good on any type of magnificent trade deal that doesn't exist. So to the 2020 presidential race, and then we'll wrap up this podcast for the weekend. You know, again, in that heated exchange between Senator Elizabeth Warren and former mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, on the stage in Las Vegas the other evening, in regards to Elizabeth Warren attacking Bloomberg, in regards to some non-disclosure agreements, some NDAs that have pertained maybe specifically to Michael Bloomberg being a named party in one of these NDAs or one of these cases, or just Bloomberg, the company, right? Because he named his company after himself as well. Well, the question was, well, are you going to release these women, or maybe even some of these men, and are you going to allow them to come forward and state what took place, what they experienced? Well, now we know that there's at least a few of these NDAs out there that Michael Bloomberg is actually a named party. And he's going to release them. He is going to release these individuals if they want to come forward and state what they experienced. Now, in the debate, Michael Bloomberg simply stated, you know, this was nothing really sexual, physically anyway. This was maybe an off-colored remark, off-colored joke. Now, Elizabeth Warren is not buying it. She seems to think it's much, much worse than that, that you have to look into the entire company, that all of them have to be released. I think, personally, that's ridiculous. She also makes the claim that this and this alone, without even knowing the full facts of the case, this and this alone is disqualifying for Michael Bloomberg to become the president. However, when she was asked in a recent town hall on CNN by Aaron Burnett about this, she said, well, you also stated, Senator, that you were going to back the Democratic nominee for president, no matter who that might be. So would you back Bloomberg if he becomes the Democratic nominee? And she said she would. She would. Because she looks at him as sort of the lesser of two evils when it becomes Bloomberg versus Donald Trump. So on one hand, these NDAs and what was alleged is disqualifying in and of itself. Without even knowing all of the facts, it's a disqualifying event. But if somehow Bloomberg becomes the Democratic nominee, she will still support him because he is the lesser of two evils when it comes down to Bloomberg versus Trump. Now, my question to this audience is, do you think that these actions are disqualifying to become the president of the United States? Now, you have to ask yourself this, especially if you're somebody who voted for Donald Trump. I voted for Donald Trump. And we know his personal shortcomings. We know his moral flaws, if you will. But there he is, sitting behind the Resolute desk in the Oval Office at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And a lot of people are more than willing to give him another 4 years at it. Is that a disqualifying characteristic to you? Do you expect your president to be a perfect man or woman? You know, I just don't get it with these off-color jokes, off-color remarks. Is everybody that sensitive to everything? I mean, I don't know the extent of it. Maybe it was bad. We don't know yet. But is that how thin-skinned everybody is, so you can't take a joke? Did anybody ever call somebody a bad name? Anybody ever make one of these off-color remarks or jokes? Anybody ever listen to a comedy or a comedian making racy statements or off-color jokes? Did you laugh at them? I mean, who are these perfect people? I don't know where they are. I don't know where they are. What about the policies that these people are engaged in? Maybe some of the philanthropy that these people are engaged in. Does that mean anything, or is it just this one thing is completely disqualifying? Well, that's what Senator Warren would have you believe. Now, a lot of this is political, obviously, because we did some of this analysis the other day. She was trying to get Bernie voters. She was trying to go into Bernie's lane. Ain't gonna happen. Why would somebody want a copy when they can have the original? He's still there. He's still kicking. They're not gonna go to you, Senator Warren. It's not going to happen. And now, months and months later, I guess she got kicked in the head and finally understands, oh, I'm not going to get Bernie's voters. Now I got to go fight for everybody else's. Little bit too late. Because she didn't walk away with any type of victory in Iowa. She didn't walk away with any type of victory out of New Hampshire. She's unlikely to walk away with any type of victory in the Nevada caucus this weekend or in the South Carolina primary taking place next week. So she's basically she's a wounded animal. So that makes her dangerous. And she wants to be the president. She's fighting for it. These are the last gasps of air that she's taking. And she's got to swing up. And she's got to make noise. And she's got to try to raise money. And she's got to try to get as much media attention as she possibly can. And this is one way to go about it. So does she, in her heart of hearts, really think that this is a disqualifying event? We don't know. We don't know, but I think it's ridiculous for her to say so, this in and of itself. Now, again, we don't know the severity of these issues, but I don't think Mayor Bloomberg would release some of these things if they were really damning and damaging to the degree of it being something like Donald Trump, right? Donald Trump is the Teflon Don. Michael Bloomberg and some others, maybe because we live in this Trump era, maybe you can skate and skirt a little bit because, well, look what you got in there. You can't blame me. Look what we have in there, right? I mean, that is a relevant argument that could be made. That could be justified. Doesn't make it right. But when you're comparing apples to apples, get what I'm saying here. The other thing that sort of upsets me with Elizabeth Warren making these statements that this in of itself, without knowing the entire story, is a disqualifying characteristic. What about all of the poor decisions that have been made by previous candidates running for president and presidents themselves, especially in regards to military intervention, sending our men and women into countries we have no business being in? Is that a disqualifying action? Is that a disqualifying decision when we send our men and women over to other countries to meddle in their affairs when we shouldn't be there at all? When our men and women come home in flag-draped coffins, when they come home wounded, not just physically, but mentally? What about all of the innocent men and women that we kill because of decisions that were made by presidents here in this country and other politicians to authorize certain attacks? Oops, it was a mistake. Collateral damage. Towns destroyed, homes destroyed, villages destroyed, livelihoods destroyed. People in other countries killed, injured physically, mentally as well, psychologically, turned into refugees. Is that disqualifying or is that perfectly A-OK, Senator? I'd like an answer to that question. Or is an off-color joke really that concerning? You know, we're in the midst here of the Me Too movement, whatever you want to call it, whatever it is. You know, I would just caution people out there. The pendulum can swing too far to the other side. The pendulum can swing too far to the other side, and it can do just as much damage on the other side as it already has on the other side. All right, and we've talked about that before. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole again. But I'm just sick and tired of all of these petty arguments. These types of jokes, these types of statements, the political correctness of everything. This is another reason why Donald Trump is the president, right? People are sick and tired of the political correctness. They're sick and tired of having to sit on their hands, that they can't make a joke. They can't make a gesture. They can't laugh at something if they find it funny. Because, God forbid, somebody finds it offensive. Well, then you know what we have to do to make sure that nobody feels offended by anything? We all have to shut up. We can't say a thing. And I don't even know if we can do anything either, because what we do, our actions could be offensive to somebody too. Are we always supposed to go to the least common denominator here? If one person is offended, that means it's off the books. Can't do it anymore. You can't talk about this, that, or the other. Can't do this, that, or the other. There's a lot of reasons why Trump is president. This is one of them. And the Democrats apparently have learned nothing about it. This is why, in all likelihood, Trump still has a chance to win this thing and to run away with it. We're going to find out. I mean, from now until the first week of November is an eternity away. I mean, I remember just last month we were doing a podcast title, It's Only January. It's Only January. That's when we were talking about the U.S. attacks on Iran, the Iranians responding in kind. I think a little bit of the outbreak, right? Then we had some of the locust stuff and we had the stock market doing what it was doing and the bond market. I mean, it was just one thing after the other. We said, it's only January. Now it's only February and the hits just keep on coming. They just keep on coming. So by the time we get to November, who knows what's going to take place? The impeachment. Yeah, that's right. The impeachment. You almost forget about the impeachment. The impeachment, the investigation, everything. And now we're only a week away from March. Unbelievable. But all right, it is Friday. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see what happens over the weekend as to whether or not I'll do a week ahead segment. If there's some breaking news, obviously I'll do my best to do a week ahead segment and discuss that. But for right now, expect to hear back from me on Monday. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll catch you here next week. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.